Hey y'all, I'm Carrie.
Hey y'all, I'm Mandy.
And this is Monstrous.
This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners, and topics that may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay. Okay, so before we get into today's case, have you heard about this story behind, like, the real story behind Barbie that's going around?
No.
Okay, well, Mama sent it to me. Apparently, it started on either TikTok or Instagram, maybe both. And it's crazy, okay? So it's about Barbara Miller, who was better known as Barbie. So we're in L.A. in 1955. You've got beauty pageants, big dreams, and a ton of pink. So apparently, Barbie Miller lived in an apartment that was all pink. Pink walls, pink curtains, even pink furniture. Like, literally everything was pink. So the 25-year-old beauty queen was all glitz and glamour. But underneath that glitz and glamour beauty, there was something dark and sinister at play. So, I have no idea if this is true, okay? I couldn't find anything to say this was true. I want to dig deeper to see if I can find anything, but I had to tell you because it's fucking nuts.
Oh, God. You're going to ruin Barbie's dream. Way to go.
I didn't ruin it. Somebody else came up with it, okay? So, this will be our first conspiracy topic that we're going to talk about, and I'm pretty sure there will be more in the future. That's just too crazy to not discuss.
Right.
So, 25-year-old Barbara Miller is the epitome of 1950s beauty. The kind of woman you look at and think she's never had a bad hair day in her life. Everyone called her Barbie. And although it was a nickname, it was also a reflection of her obsession with becoming Miss California.
Hmm.
This woman was always smiling and dressed perfectly. In an almost unnerving way. Like, is this who she really is, or is this all an act kind of way?
Ooh.
At one point, things around Barbie become dark. At every pageant she enters, at least one contestant disappears.
That's crazy.
First, there was Diane Carter, who was last seen after a rehearsal. Then, Linda Harris, who vanished the night before the regional contest. Following her was Suzanne Baker, who was never seen again after the preparation party. It was like a curse was looming over the beauty pageant circuit. That or something much darker and much more deliberate. So in total, 10 women went missing.
Oh, wow.
There were no witnesses and no clues left behind. And every single time, Barbie was the default winner.
Hmm.
So eventually, police began to connect the dots. Because it's odd how every woman that has disappeared would have beaten Barbie in the competition. And due to their disappearance, she was named the winner every time. So one day, while Barbie was out and about doing whatever she does, they decided to take a look in her basement. And what they found was disturbing, like stepping into a scene of a horror movie. Inside her basement, they found dresses stained with what appeared to be blood, hanging up on the walls like trophies. There were broken crowns arranged into a circle on the floor. And the worst find were the dolls.
The dolls?
Yes, dolls.
Okay.
Police found little handmade dolls all lined up, each one meticulously crafted and pinned with a name of one of the missing contestants.
Like voodoo dolls?
Apparently. They were like like made out of like little dolls like this.
Yeah.
Like cloth dolls. Dressed in gowns, and each one had a contestant's name pinned to it. One of the missing contestants.
That's creepy.
Right? Okay, so it's the final competition. Barbara is on stage in a white gown, looking perfect and radiant as she always did, with that same frozen smile across her face. She's standing there waiting to receive her crown, all while police wait in the wings of the stage. They go out and arrest Barbara right there on stage. The story goes that she went on to receive a life sentence in 1959. And this is where it gets really weird. In 1959, the same year that Barbara Miller received her life sentence, Maytel launched and released their new doll. She was a blonde, elegant, and perfect doll with a permanent smile frozen on her face. This doll, they named Barbie.
So was it after her?
I don't know.
Huh, that's interesting.
That's the conspiracy theory.
Right.
So if you look up the creation of Barbie, based on Mattel's word, the dolls were inspired by Mattel's co-founder's daughter, whose name was Barbara. She often played with paper dolls because it's the 50s. What the hell else do they have to play with? So the co-founder wanted to create a doll that looked more like a woman rather than a baby doll. That's the story of how Barbie came to be. But then we have this story about this Barbara, and it all happened the same year. So, I don't know.
That's weird.
So, with this story looming out there, literally everyone is left to wonder, were storytellers just trying too hard? Or is the story behind Barbie's creation a cover-up?
That is crazy. I've never heard that. I haven't heard or seen it on TikTok.
Yep, Mama sent it to me. I'll send you the video.
Yeah, send it to me.
Yeah, we'll have to see if we can find. I mean, because it's the 50s, so sometimes those cases are really hard to really find anything about. But I'm like, ooh. Which I loved Barbies as a girl. I think most girls do. I mean, I didn't like them. I didn't like them as much as other girls my age because I wanted, like, I would rather be outside in the woods and in the dirt more than the girly things, but I liked Barbies.
Right.
So looking at them now as an adult, they themselves make you think and see, like, how dangerous things like that could be. Because Barbies, if you look at them as an adult, Barbies represent an unrealistic image of what women should look like.
Right.
Because they're the quote-unquote perfect doll.
They don't have any flaws or anything.
Exactly. But then you hear this story, and it makes you think about the allure of beauty, the dangers of unchecked ambition, and the dark secrets that people can hide beneath their surface.
That's
so
right.
It makes you wonder, where did these types of toys that we had in, like, we didn't have them in the 50s, but, you know.
Right.
Like, us growing up, be in the 90s and early 2000s, because I kind of grew up in both.
Mm-hmm.
Where did these toys come from? And what stories are hiding behind those toys?
That's wild.
Crazy one.
I know. That's a good one, though.
Yeah, I was like, what? Have to dig into that. And then I had to tell you. Could not wait to freaking tell you. Because Mama sent me this one, like, last week. But I was like, no, I can't tell her yet. Yeah, I've been dying to tell you that one. Because I was like, she's going to find that just as crazy as I do.
That's a coincidence right there.
Mm-hmm. Like, it really makes you wonder, like, were these dolls really inspired by this lady's daughter or
right
this lady who went and killed 10 people just to become Miss California? Like, the pageant scene gets crazy, man.
I know. Even with the little kids.
Yeah, I know. I did one when I was younger. I don't know. I was probably like 4 or 5, I think. I got second place and most photogenic. And then I didn't do any more after that until I got older. And even older, like as a teenager, I'm like, this shit is ridiculous. Like, I'm good. I only did a couple, but I was like, I'm good. I'm not. Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those girls I went to school with, they took it serious. Like, they went out and spent hundreds of dollars on dresses and makeup. And I'm like,
yeah.
For what? They get into it. 2 hours? Like, this is just crazy to me. Ain't no way. Mm-mm. I'm good. Which I was never really like a girly girl anyway. So,
right.
I feel like that's probably why I wasn't really into it. I'm like, I'm good. I don't care about this.
It's expensive.
Yeah. And I just didn't care. But those other girls, I was like, God, they had their moms and up there with the hairstylist and all this other shit. Meanwhile, I'm over here doing this shit by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is not that serious. We are in a small town, okay, with a stage in the middle of the street. It is not that serious. Calm down. Okay, now are we ready for today's case?
We are ready.
Okay. So this week, we're going to do a different type of true crime. We're going to go back and cover something a little more ancient. We're going to talk about bog bodies.
Oh, God. Yep. I didn't look it up when you said something. I didn't look it up yet, so I don't know what this is about.
Okay, that's why I told you, because I trusted that you wouldn't look it up. So I'm glad you
didn't look it up.
It is so fascinating. Like, I love it. The fact that I find this fascinating is going to tell everyone so much about who I am as a person.
Oh, God.
Okay. So, like I said, this is some really ancient shit. Records of these finds go back to the 17th century. But the interest in learning about these bodies has really only been around since the 40s. And that interest today in the era of true crime fascination has grown. But there's still not as many people talking about them as I would think. So thanks to technology advances, our understandings of bog bodies is much greater, but we still have so much to learn about them. And I'm going to dive in and tell you everything that we know about bog bodies as of today. And then maybe in the future, there'll be new discoveries that come to light and we'll revisit it. We might just revisit it because these things are so cool.
Because you're fascinated.
They're awesome. Like, okay, so there have been a ton, like thousands of these bodies found, with most of them being found in Northern Europe.
Hmm.
But there have been a few hundred found here in the U.S. So although the interest is growing, like I said, most people, normal people like us, don't really seem to be showing a big interest in them. It's mostly the scientific community that have a bigger interest in them. So the discoveries of these preserved bodies are amazing. And like, they're not random bones. For the most part, what's found are mostly full skeletons.
Oh, wow.
Some even still have their skin on.
What?
Yeah. And these bodies have been preserved for thousands of years.
Hmm.
Yeah. Some have hair, nails. All of that perfectly preserved.
Kind of creepy.
But it's fascinating at the same time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But it's, yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to dive into exactly what these weird yet fascinating bodies are with as much detail that I found. I'm going to tell you how they form, what inside the bogs caused this preservation. Then I'm going to tell you about a few of the bodies and what has been learned about them since they were found. So, like I said before, these bodies are ancient, like Iron Age ancient. which for anyone that does not know, the Iron Age happened between 600 and 1200 BCE.
Damn.
Or BC, because BC is before Christ. BCE is before Christ existed or before Common Era. They're the same thing. What time frame it happened depends on the region in which you lived in, because Iron Age happened at different times in different regions. So most of these people were violently killed. They were, in most cases, ritualistically sacrificed or just straight up murdered.
Oh, shit.
So it's kind of sort of true crime.
Right.
And more often than not, due to the unique and specific environments in which they are found in, they are perfectly preserved, with some still having their clothes intact. These bodies are, in a way, mummified or semi-fossilized.
That's what I was going to say. Are they, like, mummified or how?
Sort of. So it's not, like, mummified, like, if you go into, you know, a museum and there's a mummy and they'll always be that way. Like, they'll never decompose, things like that.
Right.
But it's kind of like a semi-mummification, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So, first we're going to start with what bogs are. So, bogs are flat, acidic wetlands. They're often elevated higher than the land that surrounds it. And most of the water that comes into the bogs come from rain and snow. It just kind of pools. Bogs have sludgy water, and they're really more like a giant mud puddle than an actual body of water. These are often mixed up with swamps and marshes. But they're totally different. Unlike bogs, swamps have a lot of tangled aquatic plants and animal life. A marsh is spread over a very large area of land and is often shallow with bushy plants and dry islands throughout it. Bogs don't have any of those. So on top and throughout the bog is a material called peat. It's like peat moss.
Mm-hmm.
Peat comes from the slow decomp of organic matter. Due to the conditions of these bogs, few things are able to grow and thrive in and around them unless they're specific to that bog. Because the water is too acidic for anything to grow and live. So these bogs aren't like other bodies of water, like I said. If you really want to call a bog a body of water. Just kind of depends on your preference. Peat forms when plants and other organic matter fall into the shallow water. And because of the lack of oxygen, they just sit there and decompose very slowly. Like, sit there for thousands of years decomposing. Because without the lack of oxygen, you can't decompose.
Right.
So there is some, so like if it's a giant tree, the top half of the tree is getting oxygen, but the bottom half isn't. So the top half decomposes while the bottom half just kind of end up preserved, really. So one of the few things that can thrive in a bog, and because of that, bodies and other organic matter is preserved. The biggest reason this happens is because of something called sphagnum. Sphagnum is the moss that is seen on top of the bog. So if you look up a picture of a bog, the stuff on the very top, that green stuff is sphagnum moss. Once this moss dies, it turns dark brown. And then it builds up, and that becomes the peat moss underneath the sphagnum moss. The color of the peat is why anything inside the bog becomes a leathery texture and has a dark tan color. And this also causes hair to change into a fiery copper-like auburn color. So the bodies that are found, their skin is like a dark leathery skin, mm-hmm. and their hair is a copper color.
Oh, wow.
Same with trees. Their bark becomes a very dark, like almost black color. Because the peat is brown underneath changes the color of it. So this means that being able to determine the original color and skin color of the bog body is nearly impossible. But they have been able to figure out that the lighter the person's hair, the more coppery it was. So, like, since I'm a natural blonde, mine would be very coppery. Whereas Daxton's, because his hair is red, his most likely wouldn't change. Or it would just become darker. So the combination of the bog's acidity, the lack of oxygen in the water, the humic acid, the sphagnum, and the tannins inside the water create the perfect conditions to preserve organic matter, including a body. So now we're going to move on to the bodies themselves. Once these bodies are found, removing them from a bog is a very delicate and hard process. While in the bog, these bodies are deprived of oxygen. But once removed and the oxygen hits them, they begin to decompose, and this happens quickly. So in order for these bodies to stay in their preserved, mummified-like state, once they're removed from the bog, they have to be kept in an oxygen-proof sealed tank, immersed in a solution of, I'm going to butcher this word, polyethylene glycol. I think that's how you say it. Frozen, and sometimes they're even freeze-dried in order to remove the water out of it.
That's crazy.
Your face. You look like you just smelt something gross.
It reminds me of freeze-dried candy. That's automatically what I thought about.
It'd be more like a freeze-dried raisin.
Ew. Yuck.
Oh, gosh. Okay. But this process has to be done very fast. But it also has to be done very carefully. So those removing these bodies have to be fast and careful, because if they aren't lucky, then they risk the body naturally falling apart or accidentally ripping them apart.
Oh.
So many people believe that these bodies were placed in bogs as an act, as a warning to others, or as a punishment, because some of these bodies that have been found were staked down in the bog, and some of them had been alive when this happened. These people were put into the bog face up, and stakes were ran through their arms and into the bottom of the bog.
Ow.
This part was believed to have been a punishment, because by placing those into the bog, they couldn't decompose, which left them in an in-between place, stuck between life and death forever. These bogs were also believed to be where evil spirits lived. So if you really wanted to punish someone, you put them here in a dark, evil, and frozen place to be suspended forever in time, never being able to fully cross over to the other side. Then, sometimes if the person being punished has really done something bad, they would behead them, place their head and body in two separate parts of the bog, ensuring that the person would never come back together as one. Because many believe that if your body is not whole, then you can't cross over.
Right, I've heard that. I've heard that.
So this kind of leaves them in that in-between place. They know this because some of the discoveries weren't whole bodies. They would sometimes find a head in one place, a body in another, or even a body beheaded and cut in half in separate parts of the bogs. And in some cases, they would only find one part of this body and the other part or parts were never found. The bodies that have been found were found by accident. They have all primarily been found while peat farmers were in the bogs cutting peat, which this is the process of removing layers of the peat. This is because we use peat moss for landscaping, like potting mix, to cover bare spots in the grass, you know, other gardening stuff like that. Because peat, because it's decomposed organic matter, is actually really good for gardening. So these people go out and cut peat to create bales of this stuff. And this is where they're often found, in between those layers of peat. Because as the sphagnum decomposes, it creates a new layer on top of Pete, a new layer, a new layer. In most cases, these bodies end up cut apart by the peat digging process by mistake. Or while they're being moved, because at the time, up until, you know, within the last few decades, they had no idea what these things were. Nor did they have an understanding of the preservation process. So they had no idea what the fuck they were doing. They were just like, oh, it's a body. Let's pull it out of here. And they would accidentally rip it apart. Or because, you know, they have to use tools to do the peat cutting, they would accidentally cut them.
Right.
You know, they don't know they're there. So in fact, most people believed that these bodies were actually recent murder victims. So they were pulled out because there was no knowledge of how old and how fragile they actually were. So that is how well most of these bodies are preserved, is that upon first glance, they look like recent murder victims.
That's insane.
Right?
That's crazy.
Okay, so now that you know what bog bodies are, how they come to be and all that, are you ready for me to tell you about a few of these bodies?
Yes, I want to hear this.
Okay. So before we jump in, I want to let everyone know that some of these deaths are brutal and gruesome. I mean, they're thousands of years old. They didn't kill people by shooting them. Okay. Also, I'm going to send you a picture of each bog body once I tell you about them.
Okay.
Because they're amazing. And I can describe them, but there's nothing like seeing them. It's mind-blowing. And then these will obviously be posted on our Facebook page. So anybody can go look at them. And I highly suggest you do that. Okay. So obviously we don't know the real names of these people. But it's like a need that humans have to name things.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of these are named from the area in which they were found in.
Damn.
Yep. So first we're going to talk about the Elling woman. She was found in Denmark in 1938. It's believed that she is from around 280 BCE during the time of the Iron Age. The Iron Age is a prehistoric period which came after the Bronze Age. This period was when weapons and tools began to be made out of iron. Okay, before I go further, some of these names are wild, okay? They're from Europe. I'm probably going to butcher them, but I'm going to do my best. Okay, so back to the Elling woman. She was found in Vejald Skubdal by a man named Jens Zachariasen, who was a farmer. So Jens was in the bog cutting peat and digging out peat, as most people were. So while Jens is doing this, he clearly sees the body of a human. But instead of being like, oh shit, you know, and noping the fuck out of there like most of us would, he called the National Museum of Denmark. And they removed the body from the bog. They do this successfully. Later, they were able to determine that this woman was around 25 years old at the time of her murder. She was wearing a sheepskin cloak with cowhide clothes on her lower body and a blanket wrapped around her. There was a woolen belt around her head and a leather rope around her neck tied with a slip knot. Her back was preserved perfectly. And it was immediately seen that she had long hair, which had since been braided. This hair braiding was done before she was killed. And there was no way of knowing for sure, but this detail was often found in ritualistic killings during the time that she died. The braiding in her hair was perfectly preserved. It was laid back as normal, and you can see every detail in the braid as if it were a wig rather than real hair.
Oh, wow.
The front of her body, though, was more decayed and a lot tougher. More testing on the Elling woman done in the 1970s told scientists that she had been hanged without a doubt. There was a deep laceration left around her neck from the hanging, and it was believed that she may have been a sacrifice to the gods by her fellow villagers. So this is the Elling woman, and you can clearly see the braid on her hair. It is so crazy.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy?
It is.
The next one is even crazier. So we have the Tollan Man, or the Tollan, it might be Tollan. So the Tollan Man is the most preserved bog body that has been found. And he is also the most famous. He was found by two peat cutting farmers on May 11th, 1950.
Hey, he my was birthday. Found. May 11th.
I was about to say, damn, girl, you were not born in 1950.
Not the 1950 part, the May 11th part.
I was going to say, I'll make you older than my mom, girl. Okay. So he was found in the same bog that the Elling woman had been found in only 12 years later. Yeah. He was so well preserved when they found him that the farmers believed he was a freshly murdered man.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. It's way too easy, the pictures. It's crazy. Scientists believe that he was between 30 and 40 years old when he was killed, which for his time would have made him an elderly man. His death, too, was most likely a ritualistic sacrifice. He was found with a leather noose around his neck and looked as if he was sleeping. He was in the fetal position with a peaceful look on his face. You can see every wrinkle and line as if he is going to wake up and breathe right in front of you.
That's creepy.
He was found completely naked with the exception of a pointed cap on his head. He is so well preserved, you can see hair on his chin. They were also able to determine what he had ate before he died. So between 12 to 24 hours before his death by hanging and then being thrown into the bog, the Tollan Man ate porridge, a bunch of grains, and some bony fish. He may have even been poisoned before he was hung. Today, are you ready for how old he is?
How old is he?
Today, the Tollan Man is over 2,000 years old.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, I'm going to send you three pictures of him. So, this one is his whole body.
Oh, wow.
This next one is a side view, and you can see the rope. And then this is a close-up of his face.
Like, it looks perfect.
Yep. How crazy is that?
I know, you can see all the wrinkles and everything.
Like he looks like he's sleeping. Like he's just going to wake up.
He does.
And he's over 2,000 years old.
That's wild.
Right? It's nuts. So most of these bog bodies are, most of them are in museums. Okay. So the next one I'm going to talk to you about is the Yid girl. The Yid girl is from the Netherlands and was found on May 12, 1897 by two peat cutters who were cutting through peat near the village of Yid. So when they dredged up these layers of peat, she was found between the layers. Of course, they freaked out and ran off because, you know, who the fuck wouldn't? For us, it would just be shocking and like an oh shit kind of thing. But for them in the 1800s, they believed she was a demon.
Oh, God.
To be specific, they believed she was the devil because she had a big lock of fiery red hair on her head. And they thought by uncovering her, they had just released the devil. And so they ran in fear.
That's a big assumption.
Right. But after seeing nothing had happened, they kind of crept back over. But rather than do anything, they just kind of hid her back under the peat, thinking that if they covered up and left her there, the demon would stay in the bog. But over a week later, she was dug up again. And this time it was not done carefully. Once removed, they determined that the Yid girl was between 14 and 16 years old when she was killed over, are you ready? Over 2,000 years before she was found in 1897.
That's insane.
So as of today, in 2025, she is over 2,100 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. In order to determine this age, they used her remaining bones and the fact that her wisdom teeth had not yet come in or even taken root to decide her age range. She is believed to have been about 4.5 feet tall and with a tiny stature. When found, she had a ton of fiery red hair, which led them to believe that she had naturally light auburn or blonde hair. Because remember, the lighter the hair, the fiery the bog turns it. So an interesting fact is that the right side of her head had appeared to have been shaved off, like it was done some kind of weird ass punishment. Yeah, like just half of her hair is just, it's just weird. I don't understand that. So the Yid girl was wearing a heavy wool cloak. It also appeared that she had been murdered, like I said, because when she was found, there was still a wool cord wrapped around her neck 3 times. The cord was wrapped with a slip knot and was possibly some kind of belt. She had a stab wound, which was later to be determined to be a knife to her chest, kind of like near her collarbone, like here, like at the base of her throat. Unfortunately, when she was being removed from the bog, the villagers had come and taken several of her teeth, locks of her hair, and even took some of her bones.
Why?
No idea.
That's weird.
Not something I would do. I would be all about seeing it.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to take none of her body parts because I ain't trying to get haunted.
Right.
But I guess even in the 1800s, people had an obsession and a draw to the weird, creepy, and macabre things that most of the world are obsessed with today. A little too much for me, but you do you.
Each okay. to their own.
Live your best life, girl. So, in 1992, they were actually able to reconstruct her face. And the artist that helped do this had used her body in order to do this reconstruction. Which, when you look at her body and how she was found, it's amazing that he was able to do this at all. So, the Yiv girl and her reconstruction can be seen in person at the Drens Museum in Assen, Netherlands. I think that's how you say it. But I very well could be completely butchering that. So, this is a photo of the Yiv girl. I also could be saying her name wrong. It could be Yiddy, but I think it's Yid. This is her and her reconstruction.
Oh, wow. That's wild they can do that.
Right? Especially because she's so old. Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So next, I have two different men that were found in the same bog during the same year. We have the Cloney Cabin Man and the Old Krogan Man. And these are newer. So in 2003, two bodies were found within 3 months of each other in the same bog. This bog was in Cloney Cabin County, Meath, and Krogan Hill. So it's one bog that spans over two different areas. Like the others, they were discovered by pea cutters. The Cloney Cabin Man was accidentally cut in half by the machine being used to dig into the peat. His upper body had shown that he had been brutally murdered. His skull was smashed open and the bridge of his nose was destroyed. It is believed that a stone axe was used to hit the man in his head and face. They were able to identify 3 blows to the head and 1 across the body with a stone axe. He was also disemboweled. Which, for anyone that does not know, this means he was cut open and his internal organs were removed.
That's brutal.
Your face, like, I can't. It's not funny, but the look on your face was, like, priceless. His nipples were cut off.
What?
Yep.
The fuck?
He was from between 9. Dang it, now you got me all fucked up.
That's messed up.
He was from between 392 and 201 BC. Once he was removed and they examined him, his hair appeared to have been styled with plant oil, which they used as like a type of gel. So this was done on purpose. And the plant oil was used, and the plant oil that was used was actually imported. It was imported from either France or Spain because the specific plant used to make the oil was native to those areas. The National Museum of Ireland had been able to use the Cluny cabin man's hair to determine that he had ate a lot of fresh fruit. He was murdered in the late summer or early fall because these vegetables and fruit that he had ate, that's when they would have been fresh during that time of year. He, too, was also given a reconstruction. He was given a face to his name. So here is his reconstruction.
Oh, wow. He has a man bun.
Oh, my God. Yes, he was believed to have had long hair. And here is him, which is why they... You'll see why they gave him a man bun.
Oh, God. That's crazy that they can't, that they could do that, though.
Right? It's nuts.
It really is.
So, now in the Croghan Hill area of the bog, which is where the discovery of the old Croghan man happened, in a bag, he was brutally butchered and dumped there. He had defensive wounds on his upper arms where he had been stabbed while trying to defend himself. As a part of his torture, his killers had cut out holes in his arms and then threaded hazel branches through those holes.
Ouch.
This happened while he was alive. So they threaded these branches through these holes that they had cut into his arms. Then they held him down in the bog while he was being stabbed in the chest and neck. Then they cut his head off. And he was dissected, which means he was cut in half. They also cut his nipples off.
What is with cutting nipples off? You need to investigate that.
I already did. We'll get there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because I thought it was weird, too.
Yeah.
So this man is from sometime between 362 to 175 BC. He was found naked except for a braided armband around his bicep, which had been made of leather, and at some point had a bronze amulet in it. He was believed to have been around 6'6" tall. So he was a very large man.
Mm-hmm.
He was also well nourished, just like the Cluny cabin man. And based off samples of his hair, they were able to prove that he was wealthy enough to have eaten meat as a part of his regular diet, which during his time was rare. So, here is the old Croghan man. Oh, I forgot to send you this one. Okay, so this first one I'm going to send you, it's the Cluny cabin man's nails, okay? His nails were perfectly manicured. Okay, and you can tell that in this picture. It's so weird.
Oh, that's crazy. Like, you can see the lines and everything in it.
Right? Like, it looks like just a hand. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, it is a hand, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, so here is part of the old Croghan man.
Oh, my God.
I'm not sure why they call him old, but...
Wow. That's weird.
How crazy is that? Like, perfectly preserved. Even the band and everything on his arms.
I know.
Nuts. Okay, so both of these men were somewhere in their 20s. And they were part of the elite. Based off their well-manicured nails, which I showed you a picture of, it's clear that neither of them worked for a living. As I said before, it's very clear to scientists that upon looking at them and running tests, both of these men were of the upper class. Okay. Now, I was curious. It's very obvious you're curious. I don't know if any of the listeners are, but why the fuck were they out here just cutting the nipples off people? It's a weird thing. So I did some looking because I had to know. Because it's so weird. So, scientists' research has led them to believe that these men could have been failed kings. Or they were people in line to become king, but had failed to take the throne. So, if you failed to become king, they ripped your nipples off.
That doesn't even make sense.
Yep. I was about to say, Mandy is currently trying to process that.
Like, I can't wrap my head around it.
It may not be the case. Are you ready to hear the strangest fucking sentence you will probably ever hear in your life?
Yes. Maybe.
And apparently in Ireland, back in the day, a long, long time ago, it was suggested that sucking on a king's nipple was a form of submission.
What is their obsession with nipples?
Oh, no. Honestly, I think Ireland just had some horny ass kings that were out here ripping their shirts off and just had everybody suck on their nipples.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Weird.
Yeah.
Most definitely. But whatever. Who knows? Okay. It was also said that if you slice off a king's nipples, then you officially deem him ineligible for kingship. So if you don't have nipples, you can't be king.
I think I'd like to keep mine. The fuck?
Then, after your nipples have been cut off, you're seen as a failed king or a failed heir. So then you would be ritualistically sacrificed.
Like getting your nipples cut off isn't enough?
No. Also, during these ancient times, if crops failed, cattle got sick, or anything bad happened, like at all, to your village, it was the king's responsibility to sacrifice himself through a ritual in order to bring back prosperity to the village. In order to do this, he would have his nipples cut off to have himself labeled as a failed king. Then he would die through a ritualistic sacrifice.
No, I'm good. No, thank you. Mm-mm.
You don't want to be king of Ireland?
Nope, I'm good.
So, according to Ned Kelly, the keeper of antiquities at the National Museum of Ireland, cutting off the nipples of a king or someone in line to be king, like I said, would make him incapable of kingship in this world and in the next. So, if they had their nipples cut off in this life, they would go into the other world without them as well. So, Ireland's just got a whole bunch of ghosts wandering out here.
With no nipples.
With no nipples.
Could you imagine seeing a ghost and they have their nipples cut off?
A nippleless ghost? I don't think you would know if you were supposed to be afraid or laugh.
Right. You'd just be standing there staring.
This was also a way to degrade and humiliate these men as well.
Well, yeah. The fuck?
So either way, it's super fucked up, okay? Because, I mean, who wants to go to the other side and spend eternity without their nipples?
Right. No, thank you.
I would like to keep mine. Thanks.
Yep. Pass.
Next. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you about a bog body mix-up. One that led to a murder conviction.
Oh, wow.
May 13th, 1983, Stephen Dooley and Andy Mould were out cutting peat. They were in Cheshire County, England, in the London Moss Bog. During this process, a big ball of peat had gotten stuck together and on their equipment. So they go out to clean it off. And while doing this, they determined that this peat was wrapped around the skull of a woman between the ages of 30 and 50 years old. This skull was so well preserved that everyone believed her to have been a recent murder victim. They were like, this is no way. This is a regular bog body. So the authorities begin to look into recent missing women in the area. There was a woman that they believed the skull could fit. Her name was Malika Marie de Fernandez. She had gone missing in the 60s. Her case had went cold and she was never found. When she first went missing, her husband, Peter Ray Brandt, had, of course, been interviewed. And due to their knowledge of the couple's sour marriage and the fact that he lived only a few feet from the bog, he was the prime suspect. But they could never gather enough evidence to prove it or even bring him in. Now, with this discovery, they had a full-blown investigation. And they had learned that Malika had gone traveling a lot, which proved the two didn't have a close marriage. It was discovered that during the time she went missing, she had threatened to tell the British authorities that her husband was gay. Because in the 60s, being gay in Britain was a criminal offense. This would have caused him to be arrested. After this fight is when Malika went missing. It's not known if he was actually gay or not, and honestly, it really doesn't matter. What matters is the fact that she said she was going to go to the authorities, and then she disappeared.
Right.
It had been decades, and no one had seen or heard from her. But in between the time that she went missing and her body was suspected to be found, her husband had been arrested and then released. But he wasn't arrested for causing Malika's disappearance. He was arrested for sexual abuse against several children. So even if he didn't kill Malika, he was a giant piece of shit.
Right.
Cellmates from that arrest had come forward at some point and said that he had bragged to them about killing his wife. Claimed that he had talked about how he had chopped her up into pieces and buried her in different places all over his yard. The police head over and they dig up his yard. They find nothing. They bring Peter in for questioning. They do this because the skull found in the bog was right next to Peter's home. The skull is that of a woman and it fits the age range of his missing wife. They begin to explain why they brought him in and what they found. And once they do, Peter confesses to murdering his wife 20 years prior.
Damn.
He told police he flew into a rage when Malika threatened to go to them about him being gay. He said he grabbed Malika and, according to him, shook her until she died. I know it doesn't sound right, okay, because she's a grown adult. She's not a child, so how could she be shaken to death?
Right.
It didn't sound right to me either. So I looked it up, checked it out. It is rare, but it is possible. This is called shaken adult syndrome, and it's caused the same way shaken baby syndrome is, but it takes much more force. So it's rare and takes a ton of force. So I find it hard to believe that that's what happened, but it is possible. So according to Peter, following the murder of his wife, he went into problem-solving mode right away. And the solution to his problem was to take an axe, behead, dismember, and burn his wife.
Demented much?
Mm-hmm. But it didn't work out the way he wanted to. So he just threw his wife's body parts into the bog. Yep. So that's why he confessed. Her body was in multiple pieces. And he believed if they had found her skull, it was only a matter of time before they found the rest of her. So he confessed. It was a solid case of murder. And it was case closed. But was it? Authorities searched the bog looking for the rest of Malika's body. After hours turned into days, they found nothing. No other body parts were found in that bog. So they're, you know, like, oh, shit. We need to make sure that this skull belongs to Malika because there's no other body parts like he said there would be. So Detective Inspector George Abbott had the skull sent to Oxford University Research Lab for archaeology and the history of art to be examined, dated, and positively ID'd. When the findings came in, they confirmed the skull belonged to a woman aged between 30 and 50. But this woman died about 1,700 years before she was found.
Oh, wow.
When Peter learned this, he recanted. Like, just kidding, guys. I didn't kill my
it
wife.
It wasn't me.
I didn't chop her up. What are you talking about? I didn't chop her up. I'm just playing with you. Keeping you on your toes, you know? They didn't believe him. And his murder charge stood. They never found Malika's body. But 3 hours after the jury in Peter's trial went to deliberate, they returned with a verdict. In 1981, Peter was found guilty for the murder of his wife 20-some years prior. Malika was not the bog body found. But I did find a picture of her, and I'm going to share it with you, because she was a victim. She was a part of our case today. So I thought I'd only write to share a picture of her, too.
Oh, she was pretty.
Mm-hmm. She was so young. So now we're going to talk about the Lindau man. He was found in the same bog that the skull I was just telling you about was found in. They later named him Pete Marsh. This man had manicured nails, styled hair, and a neatly kept beard. He was well-nourished and clearly of a higher class. He was found naked, only with a braided leather band, which once held an amulet around his left bicep. I have no idea what the branded leather band significance is, but it's obviously some kind of significance here. So whatever the cause, most of these people were killed from ritualistic reasons for sure, but I'm not sure this one was. According to the BBC, this guy was killed by multiple blows to the head. He was then garroted, which means a metal wire or collar was placed around his neck and pulled on, strangling him. His throat was then sliced open at the same time that they're, you know, somebody's pulling this, they sliced his throat open. He was also forced to swallow mistletoe.
Mistletoe?
Yeah. I'm not sure why. Makes no sense, but I don't know. He was forced down to his knees, and with a violent knee to the back, he fell into the bog and drowned. The blows he took showed swelling, so he was alive for two of them. The third blow, which was to the top of his head, was so forceful that it caused skull matter to enter his brain.
Damn.
They believe the noose, that the metal piece that had been used to garrote him, was tightened as his throat was slit. This would have forced the blood out faster, almost spraying out of him. This no doubt would have bathed everyone around him in blood. This was a very brutal and intricate type of torture. This man, along with others, were brought to the brink of death and back over and over again until they died. They knew he was thrown into the bog because they found sphagnum in his lung, proving that he inhaled the bog water. Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yep. I told you, some of these were rough. So here is what they found of the Lindau man. And it's crazy. If you look close at the top of it, you can see the crack in his skull.
Mm-hmm.
How it indents.
Yeah, you can see it like right there on the top.
Yep, it's nuts how well, like we've said it with each one, but it's just so crazy how well preserved these bodies are. So now we're going to move on to the Grubal man. I believe that's how you say it, but I'm not for sure. On April 26, 1952, peat cutters were out doing, you know, what they do in a bog. They were near Neville Gard Fern. This is in the village of Grubal in Denmark. As with each of these discoveries, they find a body that they believe to be a recently deceased man. This was, of course, entangled within the bog, so it was not a recent murder at all. Originally, they believed the body had been placed there sometime between 1942 and 1952. They informed the village doctor and Ulrich Bossev, who was an archaeologist, of what they had found. These two guys show up, and they're shocked. Then they turn this over to the researchers of the Aarhus Museum of Prehistory. Based on their research, this man was in his 30s when he was brutally murdered. He had died over 2,300 years before he was found.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Oh, yeah. So as of today, this man is 2,373 years old.
That's insane. That's old.
Oh, yeah.
Old.
older than dirt. So he was found naked. He had a ton of hair that had turned a fiery auburn color. His nails were manicured, and his face had been preserved with a look of pure pain across it. The most notable thing about him was the brutal gaping wound in his throat. This wound was done with such force and barbarity that his head was almost removed. Like, the only thing holding his head in place was a small piece of skin.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So, according to the book Bog Bodies Uncovered, this was a huge, very intense slice across the throat. And then smaller cuts were made with some type of smooth and sharp blade, which hit the cervical vertebrae, which these are the first seven vertebrae in your spinal column. These are known as C1 through C7. This cut also severed the larynx, which, you know, is that's your throat, and made a huge hole in his mouth. Both carotid arteries and the jugular vein had been severed. So this cut virtually cut him from ear to ear. Yeah. He was stabbed from behind, which they believe was done by a sword or some kind of long blade like that. They also found an open wound and a break in his tibia, which that's the long bone in your leg. That's your shin bone. This one occurred while he was alive and being tortured as well. And it was caused by some kind of blunt object being slammed against the front of his shin over and over again until not only breaking the bone, but opening the skin, creating an open break.
He went through hell.
Uh-huh. In his stomach was porridge with a lot of herbs. There were signs that he had ingested ergot, which is a poisonous fungi that is often found in grains and can be used as a hallucinogenic, and it can cause hallucinogenic hysteria. So this man was either poisoned or he was doing drugs. One, two. It's believed that this was sometimes used in ritualistic sacrifices as well. So it really could be either one. I don't think he voluntarily had himself die this way.
Right.
This is pretty brutal. So this is the Grubal, however you say it. That's him.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You can see his hair and everything.
I know, it's not, and you can see like how like his jaw looks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Okay. So I have two more to tell you about. Then we're gonna finish it out by telling you about a site here in the US that held over 100 bog bodies.
Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm. So we have the Holder Mose woman. I don't know. So she was discovered in 1879 near Holdremose, Denmark. She was found by Niels Hansen. She is believed to have been around 40 when she died, which she would have been an old woman in her time, and she even looks like an old woman. She was believed to have been killed around 160 BC. She was found wearing what are called skin cloaks. Sounds gross. I know. They're made of animal skin and wool, which is, back then, that was what they wore.
Normal.
Her hair was chopped almost to the scalp. Her right arm had been hacked off and was found next to her. She had a long leather-type strap wrapped around her hair. Then it was wrapped from her hair to around her neck twice. So her hair is chopped off almost to the scalp. Then they take this weird leather strap thing, wrap whatever, you know, hair she has left in that, and then around her neck twice.
Damn.
Yeah. I don't understand the purpose of that. Her left arm had been bound to her body by yet another strap, and then her left leg had also been hacked off. It's believed that after being abused and mutilated, she was then drowned.
Shit, these people are ruthless.
Right. That's why I said, like, they don't play around. You weren't killed the same way back then, the way you are now.
Not at all.
Okay, so here is the photo of this woman that I could find. There was probably others out there, but it's the only one that I could really find.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. So now I'm going to tell you about the Kjeldbjerg man, who was formerly known as the Kjeldbjerg woman. He was discovered in 1941 near Odense in Denmark. This one, they did not locate an entire skeleton, but instead only a skull and a few other bones. He is dated to have died around 8,000 BC during the time of Maglemosian culture. I think I nailed that one. The few remains that they did find did not show any violence. So how he died is not determined, but it's possible that he just simply drowned. So when the bones were first found, they believed that they had belonged to a woman. But DNA testing done in 2016 revealed that the woman was actually a man. He is believed to have been aged between 20 and 25 when he died, and to have been between 5'1" and 5'3". The few bones revealed no signs of disease or malnutrition, and further analysis showed a diet that mainly consisted of plants and land-based animals, with little to no seafood. He had a full set of teeth, and it showed no tooth decay. So most likely, he was probably of a wealthier, higher class.
Right.
So, the Kjeldbjerg man died around 10,025 years ago, making him the oldest known bog body to date.
That's insane.
His remains are held in the Minter Garden Museum in Odense. Are you ready to see a picture of his skull?
Probably not. And that's all they found?
Yep, and then a few other tiny other bones.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy how, like, perfectly, like, it doesn't even look real. It is so crazy. He 10,000-year-old skull, that picture is.
Right.
Nuts. Okay. Are you ready to hear about some U.S. bog bodies?
Yes.
Okay. In Florida, in the Wendover Archaeological Site, which is a middle Archaic site and a national historical landmark. This is located in Brevard County near Titusville, Florida. This site dates back to between 8,000 and 1,000 BC. So here inside the muck pond, they found skeletal remains of 168 people inside the peat at the bottom of the pond.
Damn.
Each one was perfectly preserved. 91 of these skulls contained brain tissue. Yep. This collection and the artifacts found with them is among the largest find of its kind from the archaic period. So the site was found in 1982 when work began to build a road across the pond for a new housing development. A backhoe operator noticed several skulls inside his bucket. Could you imagine?
No.
The sheriff and medical examiner determined that these were not recent deaths. Developers then halted construction to call in archaeologists. Dating was done on two of these skulls excavated by the backhoe. These show dates of 7,210 years to 7,320 years old. So these two skulls died over 100 years apart. The developers then decided to stop construction altogether. They then donated $60,000 to have the pond drained and excavated. In 1984, the plan was approved by the state. The further excavating found that the bones were buried 6 feet or deeper beneath the surface of the peat at the bottom of the pond, putting them under 3 to 10 feet of water. Ultimately, they only drained half the pond in order to preserve the other half for later investigation. In the half that they did drain, they found the remains of both male and female victims, all ranging in ages from infant all the way to 60 years old for a total of 168 people.
That's insane.
That's only half the pond.
Right.
Yep. The skeleton showed disease and healed wounds. Many of the children's bones showed interrupted growth, possibly caused by disease or malnutrition. Older females showed signs of osteoporosis. Adults of both genders showed high levels of osteoarthritis. Some showed wounds from conflict that were likely the cause of death. One man had a bone spear point embedded in his pelvis, and others had severe skull fractures. Examination of the preserved brain tissue that I had mentioned before showed that these victims were buried within 24 to 48 hours of their death. DNA testing showed that the Wendover people carried genetic markers that linked them to ancient populations from Asia, and that they did not match any native populations that were currently alive in North America today. This DNA also indicated that one family had used the same site as a family grave site for over a century.
Oh, wow.
Many artifacts were laid to rest with the bodies as well. Archaeologists recovered 86 pieces from 37 separate graves. This site is only one of many that have been found since the 1970s. That have been found since 1970 that has led to major discoveries of the Archaic people and their period in time. This site specifically is one of the most significant archaeological sites ever excavated. The Archaic people were nomadic hunter-gatherers and were descendants of the Paleo Indians. So they basically found an Indian burial site.
That's not good.
Oh. You need to leave them bodies the fuck alone. That's what you need to do.
Yep. Leave them where they're at.
Or not. Don't play. You don't fuck with Indian burial sites. So these bog bodies are fascinating, and the science behind it's all amazing. They're able to tell how they died, what they looked like before they died, what they ate, and how they most likely lived thousands of years later. Even now, they're learning so much from these bodies. Like, most of these discoveries didn't happen until the 50s, 80s, and 90s. They believe one thing when they're first found, and then, you know, decade or decades later, the technology progresses and they learn that they were completely wrong or make a new discovery altogether. So they're not preserved or mummified as you've seen in the normal sense of the word, or placed under ice for thousands of years either. These people were murdered, thrown into a bog where the natural elements and chemical reactions preserved them for us to find 2,000 plus years later. And I find it fascinating.
That is really neat, though. That's crazy how it works.
It's just natural preservation is all it is. It's crazy to me. And then you think about, like, we think today we are so knowledgeable, we know all. That's not true at all. People back then were much more knowledgeable and more advanced than we probably are today. The peat moss bog body alone shows that even thousands of years ago, they had some kind of understanding of the anatomy and how this stuff would affect the body. I mean, they knew that if they held that metal bar against his throat and slit his throat, it would cause him to bleed out much faster.
Right.
I can guarantee that's something very few people today know. People thousands of years ago were much more knowledgeable and advanced than I think any of us realize for that simple fact alone. I mean, come on. The fucking Egyptians built 3D fucking triangles. Come on. Mm-hmm. They know something we don't, that's for sure, because we can't even do that today. That's a whole nother subject because most people think aliens did that. That's a whole nother topic. I just think people are getting dumber and dumber. That's what I think
so too.
I don't think it got nothing to do with aliens. It's just people are getting stupider and stupider.
Yep.
So I may have to look up more of these and we may have to do another episode.
Okay. That was interesting.
I can't get over these. So like I said, there's thousands of these bodies have been found.
Yeah.
So at least for now, that's all I have about bug bodies.
That was interesting. That's really cool.
They're so fascinating. I told you, it's going to say so much about who I am as a person.
Right.
Because most people are like, no, I'm good. No, thank you.
That was really cool.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
I did. That was interesting, for real.
I'm for real. I may have to do another episode on some different ones.
Cases?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Some different bog bodies, because it's just so interesting. It's fascinating to me. Especially because it's done naturally. Like, there's no human intervention there. They're in the bog, and Earth just does its thing. And it's just amazing to me. Have you ever heard of bogwood?
Mm-mm.
Okay. You'll have to Google it and look it up. Bogwood. So, you know, like those big old tables that are made out of like those really thick, dark pieces of wood. And they're like, oh, it's a bogwood table.
Mm-hmm.
That's bogwood. Like it's a tree that fell into a bog and was preserved.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's how you get bogwood. Because these old trees, they die. They land in the water and they can't survive in the water. So the top half decays and the bottom half is preserved. And you get bogwood.
That's really cool.
Or,
put it back.
Bog maples. Sometimes they're called that. Or bog pines. That's what it is. So these bogs literally preserve anything organic, like not just people. So cool.
It really is.
Okay. That's all I got. I ain't got nothing else. You got anything?
No, that was interesting.
All right. Well, maybe we'll dig into another one, see what else we can learn.
We should.
All right. I'll do some digging, see what else I can find that I didn't already tell you about. Okay, so next week, I have another old case. One that's been solved, but there's two theories to what actually happened.
Nice. Should be interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one. So, everybody come back next week for that episode. It involves one of the FBI agents we talked about last week.
Oh, nice.
So it's a good one. As always, photos for this episode can be found on our Facebook page. That link's in the episode description. I know we say every week to give us a rate and a review. Those rates and reviews help. I know it's a pain, because who wants to rate and review anything? I know I don't. But they help. It helps, you know, us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. Helps other people find the podcast. All those things. Don't forget to subscribe so you can get notifications. Really appreciate all of those. And that's it. So we hope you keep listening. And remember to
watch for monsters.
And don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.